My boys got phones when they were 13. My daughter got her phone when she was 12, but we had reasons to give her that phone at 12. We had moved recently. She started a new school. She was very unsure of everything. She wanted to be able to get in touch with us. So that, even in that, it's kind of more surface level, right?
Yeah.
I think there's underlying that question, there's a bigger question even, probably more really the right question to be asking is, when is your kid mature enough that they can get a phone? Not necessarily just when are they old enough to get a phone.
Our children are leaving the faith in droves.
As a result.
Oh, I got a pause here.
We're going live right now.
How can we raise our kids to stand firm, have a faith that lasts, and navigate such a time as this?
We hear reports that our nation's capital has just been...
To turn a nation, you have to take the next generation.
Today in the news, COVID-19 numbers.
I'm Jake McCandless, and this is my podcast, Stand Firm Parents. We're working together to help our children have a faith that lasts.
And now, here's Jake McCandless.
Okay, this may be one of the most important shows that we've done and will do. I don't think I say that every time. Do I say that every time? I want to probably a lot of times. But I really think this is going to become one of the most important shows. It's a question on really probably all of our minds as parents. This show also may crush some kids' dreams this Christmas. That's why I'm calling this episode a Black Friday pause. A warning before you head into Black Friday and get that great deal. My guest today is the one behind you being able to hear this and see this on LifeWord's online platforms. He is a LifeWord guy, so of course he's going to be here in studio. And he also is the first guest who has asked to be on. I didn't have to beg him. Now, once he told me what he would be talking about if he came on, I begged him. My guest today is John Dobson, who is the Director of Internet Broadcasting and Digital Strategies here at LifeWord. John believes that if Paul were alive today, he would use the digital realm to distribute his message, which is a fascinating thought. As I mentioned, John is the Director of Internet Broadcasting and Digital Marketing Strategies here at LifeWord. He's been doing that since June of 2018. As I said, John is the Director of Internet Broadcasting and Digital Strategies with LifeWord. He's been doing that position since 2018, been with LifeWord since 2017. He is married to Robin. They have three children, and he has been a pioneer in tech and in ministry, starting with his groundbreaking Christian rock radio show, Extreme Air. And I got to hear the years on this. He also was part of a team on the first internet filter for dial-up. He has worked at tech companies Altel and Axiom, has worked in IT and digital marketing in large churches. He led the web team and assisted digital marketing at Family Life. He's owned his own digital marketing company, and now he's at LifeWord working magic, and I'm glad myself and Stand Firm Parents gets to be part of that magic. As I said, John is the first one to ask to be a guest on here. We were in a meeting for another show. I was a guest on LifeWord's show, LifeWord Today. John was there as well. And he says, hey, if you'd ever like for me to come in and talk about children and technology, I'd love to do it. And I said, what are you doing next week? Because as parents, I know for me, it's one of the biggest questions. Actually, my daughter was asking me if she could have such and such technology-wise just this past week, and I said, well, wait till I have this discussion with John. So let's have that discussion. John, this topic is one of the main questions I hear on the lips of parents. Parents are intentionally raising their children in the Lord, and I make that point because it's something, it's like a big question I hear, but it's also a question I don't hear. That probably doesn't make much sense. But those who are concerned about it are asking and looking for help. But then you have those who don't seem to be concerned. I know those watching and listening are concerned, but there really does seem to be just a few parents out there who are on the alert. And those who are still don't feel like they know enough. The question of when we should give our children a phone, a tablet, what they should have access to, how we should handle social media with them, really may be one of the biggest questions we have as parents, or we will encounter here in a couple weeks. It's Black Friday. There's some great deals out there. Before parents buy that device for the kids, you get that great deal, make them happy at Christmas. Why is it important that we pause and think what's best for our kids in this realm?
Well, so I think, I mean, people are watching this probably going, who's this guy? Why is he telling me anything? Let me give you a little background on me, and I think it kind of sets up kind of why I may be sitting in this chair right now and we're having this conversation.
I already told him that you're the first guest that's ever asked to be on here.
Oh, wow. Well,
I said, what are you doing next week? You know, yeah. It's like, because this question is what I get.
Okay.
And, you know, I've known you for a while.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, now that partner with LifeWord, following closely, like, you work magic. Like, if somebody's in the know of digital marketing, stuff like that, and see what you've done at LifeWord, it's just absolutely incredible. But when I started reading about your journey, I'm like, man, like, if somebody should talk about this, this is you. So yeah, tell us this journey that you've been on that brought you to be able to have this discussion.
It's crazy. I mean, I know my story because I've lived it, and I go, how in the world did I get here? But all by the grace of God, trust me. My undergraduate degree is actually in early childhood education. So I was supposed to be certified licensed to teach kindergarten through sixth grade.
Oh, that's an element. I didn't know that one. I skipped over that in that bio. Yeah.
Well, that's not in the bio. So that goes back so far, I just left it out.
Okay. So technology layered with early ed. Yeah. Okay, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So here's how that went. So I got this degree in early childhood education. I'm convinced I went there to meet my wife, Robin. That's where we actually met, was outside of the same class we were taking. Hers just happened to be after mine, and we went to, at that point, it was the Baptist Student Union. And so we struck that relationship up, and later married now. This is our 30th year wedding anniversary this year. And so went from that into student ministry, college ministry, with Johnny Hoffman over at the Association of Baptist Students.
Oh, yeah.
I was associate director there with him. And we did Christian rock concerts, Christian concerts, and we brought groups like For Him and Jars of Clay. I don't remember all of them, but I mean, there were a bunch of them that we brought in a short amount of time. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about Christian concerts or promoting it. And everybody was like, well, John, what do you know about it? I'm like, nothing, but I'm going to go do it. I'm going to figure it out. So
what years were these? Because
this would have been like mid to early 90s.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I'm in the Christian music scene.
Yeah.
Then. So, okay, good. So people are, we won't give away ages, but if you're here listening and recognize some of these bands, or maybe when I think about some of these bands, hey, favorite band, Christian band of the 90s, put it in the comments. We'd love to hear that.
Sorry, I interrupted you. No, you're good.
I've been so like this discussion's so important, yeah. But the number one thing I've been worried about here is like, tell me about this Christian rock experience.
So this... We went from Christian concerts. We were working with the ABS and with Johnny, and I started realizing some of the things were happening in this thing called the internet. And I go back far enough that I was like, people were wondering what in the world's email, and there was a thing called Netscape browser, and you know, and it was so early on. I remember punch cards. In fact, when I finished my master's degree at University of Central Arkansas, they still had punch cards that they had inside. So maybe that's even earlier than most people remember. But we went from Christian concerts, and I started just getting a desire to minister to young people in Central Arkansas, and started thinking about what it would mean to put a Christian rock concert radio show together. And so we did some of those, and opportunities through promoting those got me connected with KYTN 107.7. It's now Alice 107.7 in Little Rock, but at the time it was a Christian radio station. And went down, talked to Gary, who I'd already been working with because I'd been promoting these concerts, and was, you know, spending money with him on the ads and whatnot to promote them. And I said, hey, I got this crazy idea. I want to do a Christian rock radio show for kids in Central Arkansas. And he said, I've been waiting for somebody to do that. I didn't have a clue how to do a Christian rock radio show. It was literally just, I'm going to go figure it out. So real quick, I'll tell you the God story behind this. I went from this crazy idea. Gary said, yep, I'll give you 2 hours on Saturday, not having any equipment, no experience, never produced anything like it in my life. I sat down with Donnie Parrish, and he said, that's a crazy idea. And I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. Went to a bank, sat down with a loan officer, I was a just dirt poor married guy, young guy. I mean, we'd been married maybe 2 years at the time. I said, I need $7,500 to buy equipment. Told him the story, what I wanted to do. He said, hang on a second. Let me go get my manager. I want him to hear this story. So his manager comes in. He sits down. And I gave him the same spiel. Had no documents. I had nothing to offer. I had just a story and what God put on my heart. And the guy literally looked across the desk. He said, I'm going to give you a check for $7,500 today. He said, I want you to promise you'll come back in a year and tell me what happens with this show.
Wow.
And I walked out of there with $7,500 in my hand, and I'm going, what in the world do I do now? And so I came straight over to Mike Jones at the time, who's working as an engineer at LifeWord. I said, Mike, what do I need? And so he set me up, and we got the equipment and ran for about 2.5 years doing that ministry. And at one point, it was the number one show on Saturday nights, men ages 18 to 24. And we were getting letters from kids all over the place. I got a letter from a guy that was on death row at Tucker, how that show had ministered to him. So, anyway, that's some of the background. So,
and it's called Extreme Air.
Extreme
H-E-I-R,
Air,
right?
That's exactly right. Is that?
Yep. So, what bands? What's some bands that would have been there?
Well, I mean, a lot of bands that have put some crunch in your music. I mean, we were doing Living Sacrifice on the Rear Hardian, you know, and that would be later in the night, obviously. Audio Adrenaline was big. I mean, whenever they come out with new songs, I mean, we would get CDs in the mail from these, you know, record companies all over the place. I've still got a tub, in fact. I mean, one of the huge tubs with rollers on it, packed with CDs and music from the 90s, basically, is what it amounts to.
Any Five Iron Frenzy?
All that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Ska, the whole nine, yeah. In fact, we did a ska concert in Little Rock at one point.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know we got an important subject, but I've just been like, man, I got no more.
That was a fun story. Yeah.
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 Okay, your journey. Sorry.
There you go. Yeah, so Rob and I got married in 94, and 30 years later now, we have three kids.
You've always been on the cutting edge of technology, it seems like.
My tendency has always been to embrace the change, and so I see new things, and I've always tended to kind of run to those a lot of times without anybody around me. I mean, I just love the new things and change because I think there's opportunity in that. And so that's, I think, why probably technology, online, digital marketing, all those things excite me, because it's new, it's different. A lot of people are still trying to figure it out. I just like that learning process. So, yeah.
So you've been in this.
You bet. Yep. Been doing it for now 25, coming on really 30 years, I guess, in some form or fashion. So, yeah.
So why us parents, why should we pause before we get our kids online, give them devices,
well,
all those
I think
things?
You kind of asked the question, and it's a great question. It is. I mean, parents are asking, when is the right age to buy my kid a phone? And that, to me, as I've thought about it, now raised, you know, three kids, and they've got phones. My boys got phones when they were 13. My daughter got her phone when she was 12, but we had reasons to give her that phone at 12. We had moved recently. She started a new school. She was very unsure of everything. She wanted to be able to get in touch with us. So that, even in that, it's kind of more surface level, right?
Yeah.
I think there's underlying that question, there's a bigger question even, probably more really the right question to be asking is, when is your kid mature enough that they can get a phone? Not necessarily just when are they old enough to get a phone. I think age doesn't give really an indication of when they're really mature enough to handle, from a mental standpoint, the decision-making processes, the responsibilities involved with owning a phone. That age doesn't really reflect that real well.
Man, that's a good question. I said in the opening that my daughter asked for, I think, access to something online this week. And I said, well, wait till I have this discussion with John. I'll blame it on him with that. But maturity-wise, I mean, that's a total different way of thinking about this. And so in some ways, we can be preparing them for something like this.
Yeah.
What do you mean by maturity?
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of have divided this up. I mean, I've got like seven areas, if you will, and some questions that I think kind of help parents to kind of frame that conversation with themselves as much with their kid as to how mature are they, when are they really ready to get that phone that you want them to have, obviously. And so, I mean, there's nothing, I don't really, I mean, there's a lot of things pervasive in this culture that we live in, but if you think about the smartphone, I mean, the internet alone was the biggest shift in communications in 500 years since the printing press. And then in 2007, we get this little thing called an iPhone, and that was a disruptor. And now you roll this forward to 2024, and boy, I mean, if there's anything that causes anxiety, like the loss of a phone or not having access or getting taken away from us, that thing's got a lot of power over us as individuals, you know, and our emotions and how we feel and how we respond and what we, how we research, communicate. I mean, how, what other device right now has that kind of power over us in that sense? You know, it's interesting because we know a lot of these stats, obviously, but 77% of Americans own smartphones right now. And teenagers spend an average of 9 hours every day on their smartphone. 9 hours on their smartphone. Now, 66% of teenagers feel anxious when they don't have access to that phone, right? And so 34% of teenagers say that they have excessive smartphone use. I think that number is a little bit low myself. I think it's higher than that.
It's like a self-reporting number. So I mean, that's probably
now we're, too I mean, much. And so 47.
I would have lied on that question.
No, I would too. 47% of teenagers say that they are constantly checking their phone. 47%. Let's just call it half. So, and I bring that up, and we're pointing and talking about teenagers, but what about the adults? I mean, are we that much better? Well, 44%, you know, 66% of teenagers said they're anxious when they don't have access to their phone. Well, 44% of adults said they're anxious when they don't have access to their phone. So it's a shared issue, I think, across the board. But as parents, and we're talking about kids, and when are they responsibly or mature enough that we want to give them that phone? Let me just kind of drop into some of these questions.
John, before you, I want to get to these seven things on maturity.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think about, like, giving my kids phone, the phone or access to thing, the main thing I'm thinking about is going back to that, the filtering thing. I'm thinking about, you know, I don't want them to have access to pornography or, you know, other harmful stuff. I don't want predators to be able to connect with them.
Yeah.
But it seems like you're talking about there might even be greater health, you know, detriments. I mean, you're talking about being anxious over not using it.
Yeah.
Are there some greater health things that maybe we're not even taking into account as parents?
Well, okay, so in digital marketing, I'll just kind of frame it this way. We do what are called A-B split tests. A-B split tests would mean, let's say we've got a web page that we want to understand which headline on that web page works better than the other. And so we stand up an A control and a B test, and we go, okay, does the A or the B win out when we split our traffic and go 50-50? You know, so what we're trying to do is, from a behavioral standpoint, we want to know our audience, which one do they respond to the best, right? And so even a single word we find sometimes can cause one to perform better than another. And so if you roll that into phones and you go, what about social media? What about the impact that it has on our kids, on us as individuals? They A-B split test Amazon, for example. I'll give you this. Amazon.com never has a moment they're not testing something. They hadn't moved a button. They haven't, like, testing a color of a button, even the word on the button. They're testing all kinds of things all the time to find what it is that works best. So they want the best response to get the best return on their money. That's what they're looking for. Social media, in that sense, when we click like and you get that dopamine hit, the behavioral science behind how that's developed and how that's built is fascinating, or it can be seen as very dangerous as well. So they know exactly what they're doing when they build those social media platforms and why they put that like button where they did. And they know exactly what it does when you click on that like button. So they're going to get you to do it as much as you possibly can because they know it hooks you, right? Flipping through the videos on TikTok or Reels on Instagram or whatever that might be, little bitty dopamine hits, they add up over time. So there's a lot of behavioral science that's getting incorporated into all of this.
That's really scary when you think about that.
What is? You feel like a rat in the laboratory a little bit.
But, I mean, us and our data, we like, I hear people talk about, I've heard it said that, you know, it's our data is basically the commodity within social media. I mean, it's getting what, you know, our habits, our things. I mean,
i.e., we are the commodity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's us, right? I mean, that data that's produced is because of what we do. That's me. As far as the internet's concerned, that's me. Yeah.
And so I'm on the a board of trustees for Central Baptist College that we mentioned. I'm also on the board of Association of Baptist Students there at University of Arkansas, large campus. And one of the things, every single meeting in both of those board meetings gets to the mental health of college students, which is, you know, depending on which you're, you know, maybe you're listening and that's the age of your kids, maybe they're headed that way. I want to get these seven things in, but do you think that social media technology is playing a part in that?
There's no doubt that it plays a part, right? I mean, one thing I tell people all the time, the phone in itself, that device, that tool that's there, that doesn't make us worse. I think it exposes more of who we really are as people. And so in the sense when people say, well, nobody's real online, they're all fake, I tend to disagree a little bit. I think that may be really underlying the driving motives of why people act the way they do and do the things they do online. Those are present whether you had that phone in your hand or not. That sin, that brokenness that we're all born with in that sense, that's always there. It just happens to be the tool of the day is a phone and not a scribe. Or, you know, it's a TV and, you know, not something else, a book that we might have entertained ourselves with 100 years ago. So the tool in itself is not bad. I think that, like I said, it just exposes more of who we really are as people. So does it have an impact on our anxiety? Does it have impact on our emotions and all the things that we are and how we act? Absolutely it does. It does. But I think that kind of gets back again to this conversation about when are we mature enough? What are the boundaries? What are the things that we need to be aware of? What are the critical thinking issues or tools that we need to have in our tool pouch to help us to kind of, you know, navigate through that? Not just ourselves, but our kids, obviously, as well.
So, John, you're just upstairs or somewhere in this building. I don't know. I think that you keep that undisclosed, but I think this is a discussion we need to have ongoing. And if you're watching, listening in the comments, or you can email me, jake@stanfordministries.com. Would love to hear from you. Maybe some questions on this subject. But again, really, you were ahead of time as we were talking about this. You threw out this maturity aspect. And man, I think that's a great perspective. You talked about seven different items along those lines. Could you walk us through that?
Yeah, I'll read these because I think it's important just to hit these the way they are. I think responsibility is one of the items that has to be considered. Judgment has to be part of that conversation and that thought process. Technology use in itself, how are they using it or how well do they use it or not? Trust, can you trust your child in the sense that they're ready to get that phone? The rules that you as a parent wrap around them getting that phone, the agreement that they're going to follow that, going back into that trust a little bit. The social maturity of your child, and are they ready from a social standpoint to really take on something like a phone? And then communication around that. How well do your kids communicate and those things? So each of those seven areas, I've identified seven questions. None of these aren't covering everything, obviously, but it just kind of gives, I think, you as the viewer and the listener, something to kind of start framing some of this conversation around these seven areas, if you will.
Man, I think that's incredible to think through. Is this something like once they... that you can ramp up as they're using it? Or do you think is it like you want to have this in place before you utilize technology?
I mean, I think a lot of these questions and these seven areas, I mean, as a parent and you're trying to decide, is your kid ready to get that phone? Are they at a maturity level to handle, you know, something as powerful as that phone in their hand on a constant basis, especially if, you know, you're allowing them to be on that phone for 9 hours a day, and that's the average among teenagers. That's going to have an incredible, incredible influence on their life.
So you've got these seven areas, and you talk about seven questions. I know our time's limited. We're going to have to do this again.
We'll
We're going to have to pick this up.
Yeah.
Can maybe you start with one of those and break it down? Give us some tips to walk away with.
Yeah, I'll mention a few of these questions because I think it starts, as we mention these, it kind of starts framing it better, I think. So in the area of responsibility, here's a good question. Does your child take on more responsibilities like part-time work or extra chores around the house? And you go, well, my kid doesn't do any chores. Well, that's a pretty good indicator, right? I mean, what's that level of responsibility that your kid has in getting things done and being responsible in how they're getting done? And then you look at judgment. Judgment, a good question here is, does your child show good judgment in other areas of their life? That can be a reflection on how well they're going to be able to handle themselves with a phone in a social sense, online, 9 hours a day, if that were the case. But that's a great question that you've got to keep in front of yourself as you're thinking about, is my kid mature enough and responsible enough to take on a device like a phone? Technology use. How do they handle technology? Like, following screen limits. Now, this is after you've already given them a phone and you've probably set up an agreement. This is what I encourage all parents to do. Set up an agreement that your kid actually, and I've even got a document I've given to parents before, and it lays out all of these rules, and the kid reads them and they go, yep, I'll follow that. Mom and dad, yep, we're going to enforce these things. They both sign at the bottom. Everybody puts their name on the document. All of a sudden now you've got a written document that if things go south, and they do, you can pull this document and go, you know, you agreed, you signed for it. Now we've got to have the consequences. Choices have consequences. That's what I tell our kids when we were growing up. Every choice you make has a consequence. It's going to be positive or it's going to be negative. And I think that's true, especially with the phone and the way that they're being used today by our kids. That's just a few of the questions. So okay. Do you want to keep running?
Yeah, let's keep doing it. Like, so the agreement right there. Like, yeah. I'm going to have to get with you and see if we can make this available.
Yeah.
Something like that available. That's incredible. That's incredible thought. And you mentioned the use responsibility around screen time. And this is something, I hope she's not listening, but one of my daughters, like, so we ramped up phone use. Yeah. We used to basically started with just call and text.
Yeah.
Limited contacts. And one daughter, I mean, she really is not even worried about it. You're making her use the phone, basically, we're at innocent.
Yeah.
But other one, you know, if she grabs anybody's device, she's locked in. Yeah. And so, like, taking those two instances, me and my wife had this discussion where, like, they're the same, you know, looking at the same ages, but they're just totally different when it comes to technology.
Right, which is even more reason, right, to think about. Yeah. Every child's different. I mean, my first kid, he's more like me in that sense. I mean, same things, drivers. I mean, it's like over time, it's just like, wow, that kid is my twin. Now, my old youngest son is probably more like his mom in the sense of his temperament and how he processes things. Two totally different kids. Now, our daughter, she's kind of like my oldest a little bit. She's got a little bit of me, a little bit of her mom. She's kind of like combo kid when it comes to that kind of stuff. But every child being different, you got to consider them not as I got three kids in my situation. I got one child, and I'm going to determine, is he responsible enough and ready to have that device? And again, like I said before, both of our boys, they turned 13, and we had a phone in their hand. Now, around that, when they got their phone, this is another kind of fun thing that we did that was significant in their life. We kind of had a rite of passage ceremony for our boys. So they go from 12 to 13. That's a big deal, right? They're becoming teenagers. We had, for both of our sons and our daughter for that matter, when she turned 13, we had significant adults in their life that had, you know, teachers, people that had impact in their life and that they respected. We had them come together. For both of our boys, for example, we went on a nature trail, and I planted these guys along the trail, and each one of them had assignments to talk to my boys about certain things that they were about to encounter as they look forward to life and life as a teenager. Part of that was we got a phone for them at the end of that, but as they walked that trail, each man kind of built on what the previous guy had, and at the end, it was me as their dad, and I took them for that final walk, basically, in preparing them for that teenage years. We gave them a Bible, and at a point we gave them that phone. And I made sure to make them understand the responsibility of what that meant for them.
Okay, I just got chills. That man, that's incredible. Wow. Okay, that's something else we need to explore. let's finish this question. But, I mean, one of the things that keeps coming up in every one of these conversations is intentionality.
Yes.
And that's really what rite of passage. Oh, man, that's just incredible. But in thinking through all of this is being very intentional, because for me, I was hoping you'd give an age. And once we hit that age, we just check that box. Okay, yeah. They're that age. We hand it over. Yeah. But no, you got to make us even more intentional. But I love this. So you've walked us through a few of those questions. Let's go through the rest.
Yeah, so trust is the next one. The question there is, do you trust them to come to you with their problems? Right. So in the online realm, on that phone or tablet or computer or whatever it may be, obviously there are things out there that are not healthy. There's probably more that's not healthy than is, to be honest with you. But in that sense, does your child feel that they trust you enough, they have the kind of relationship that they can come to you with those problems when they come up that they encounter? Rules. Will they agree? This kind of goes to that document that I mentioned a moment ago. But will they agree to rules about how and when they can use that device? And here in a little bit, if we have time, hopefully we will, we're just going to give you a couple of resources of how you can monitor that time that they're on the device and how you can control that time that they're on the device. Something that might be helpful for some of you. Social maturity. Here's the question. Can they handle the messages, the group chats, and the posts that come with a phone? Right? So you start thinking about bullying. I mean, just a, emotionally toying with your son or your daughter online. There are all kinds of things that can mess them up. But are they socially mature enough to be able to handle that when they start seeing that? Communication is the last. That's the seventh. Can they communicate effectively on a phone? Now, that's a question, obviously, that can't really be answered until they have one. You know, most kids, most moms and dads, the average age that a kid gets on the phone, starts getting on a phone now, is about 2 years old. Because mom and dad, in a lot of cases, will give them the phone. They watch those silly, you know, YouTube videos or whatever it is. I'm telling you, though, they're getting influenced. They're getting inducted into this way of life of that device in their hand, you know, and all the things that come with that, unfortunately. So those are the seven areas, just seven questions to kind of start that conversation in your own mind about whether your kid's mature enough or responsible enough to really take that phone at that time.
Man, it's so good. Could you walk us through those seven again? Because I want to make sure everybody's got it. And then they can remember these questions as well. With that,
yeah, responsibilities. Number one, does your child take on more responsibilities like part-time work or extra chores? The second was judgment. Does your child show good judgment in other areas of their life? Technology use. Number three, how do they handle technology, like following screen time limits? And number four was trust. Do you trust them to come to you with their problems? Number five was the rules. Will they agree to the rules about how and when they can use the device? Number six was social maturity. Can they handle the messages, group chats, and posts that come with a phone? And then number seven was communication. Can they communicate effectively on a phone?
I don't really know technology well.
Yeah.
Me and my wife have been fumbling through this, and but one of the things that we have done is we've given them a device with very limited access, call and text. Just, you know, accepted contacts. Let's see what you do with that for a year.
There you go.
And then, you know, and so I guess we've accidentally done something okay. But, you know, I think.
Intentionally made an accident.
there you go.
Yeah. Let me say this first. You got one shot to raise your kid. You don't get minutes back. You can't do the seconds over again. You get one shot at this thing. And here I am on the back end, three kids, and not too far from being an empty nest, my wife Robin and I. And I'm going to tell you, when they get in, you know, sophomore or junior years of high school and the clock's ticking and it strikes you one day and you realize just how little time you've got with them in that house with you left, man, things start getting pretty heavy pretty quick. And so as a parent, obviously trying to keep up with the culture that they live in and the impact that has on their life and all the different things they've got coming at them, a great resource that I've really come to love is called axis.org, A-X-I-S.org. It's a nonprofit. It's a Christian nonprofit organization. It aims to help parents to kind of create this lifelong Christian living in their child's life. So they've got all kinds of resources. I'm not even more than phone. I mean, there's just all kinds of resources there that help you to translate basically the culture that your kids are living and growing up in. One of the things that I'd encourage you to go check out, if you go to axis.org, they've got a resource, and I think it's still on their homepage, and you can give them your email and sign up and download this. But it's called the Everything Smartphone Guide Toolkit. And it does a great job regarding smartphones, just kind of walking you as a parent through a lot of the things you need to be concerned and think about when you're considering smartphones for your kids. The second one that I'll give you is not a Christian site. It's a UK-based site, great website, though it's a resource. And it really kind of hones in on internet safety, online safety in that sense. If you go to internetmatters.org, internetmatters.org, and you just do in the search up at the top in the header of the site, you'll see there's a little search bar. If you just plug in online security, it's going to give you a lot of great resources for you to consider and read through.
John, thank you so much. Just, I didn't know quite the mix of back. I'm like, he's a tech guy. We're going to talk tech, but you've got early elementary ed, you've got youth ministry, college ministry, family.
I'm all messed up.
All this. And so, parents, this is somebody to lean into. John, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing for Stand Firm Parents, but thank you for this. And this is probably going to be a staple because, I mean,
We just scratched the surface.
Yeah. I mean, 9 hours of the day.
Yeah.
And I mean, and how, you know, compared to what we have. John, thank you.
Yeah. Next time we come back, we might talk about software that's available to help moms and dads monitor and how they can limit the usage of the phone, just given the agreements and things. I mean, you've gone through these questions. You've got your kid a smartphone. Now what do you do? There's some great software that's available out there to help them control that.
Okay. Well, I'm hearing do part two. Go ahead, just do a part two.
Here it comes.
So I'll be looking for that. Incredible. Again, I love doing these interviews because I don't know exactly where they're going to go. I knew we're going to talk about phones and parents and those things, devices and safety. But talking about maturity, man, what an awesome thought. Again, it keeps coming back to intentionality. You're going to hear from John a lot. I think this is a subject we need to talk a lot about, and it's one I don't know, and I'm having to walk through this myself. Be looking for these resources from John. We're going to try to post them when they come available. They may be in the show notes even now as we talk about the agreement that he talked about and those seven things, those seven questions. Just incredible. Again, the key, parents, we're disciple makers. We're here to protect our kids. We're here to raise them up in the Lord. And that takes intentionality. And that intentionality translates to devices, access, social media, everything. And we don't need to just think about protecting them, but how do we also empower and equip them? You've been listening to Stand Firm Parents. Stand Firm Parents is a production of Stand Firm Ministries in partnership with LifeWord Studios, created by Jake McCandless and Brandon Harrington of Dime Collective. Again, thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe, share, and most importantly, stand firm.